Financing topics with Wade Jabor of Jabor Realty. Stay tuned for Bob. About a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topic of the day. We are broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyear Buyer, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I am here with my executive producer, Jason Frisacci, of Rising Tide Marketing. We have as a guest tonight Wade Jabor. We're talking about home buying and mortgages, and what better person to have than Wade Jabor. Wade is the owner of Jabor Real Estate on 3rd Avenue and 87th Street in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and he has been in business for decades and has helped thousands of families achieve the goal of home ownership, and also help them with financing. And what more appropriate topic to talk about financing and credit and mortgages in this environment, when all we're hearing in the news is there's an uptick in the economy, that home sales are starting to take off, that mortgage rates are staying at a historic low for the very foreseeable future. And also the recent news that the Obama administration has settled with the big banks. I think they settled for about $17 billion. And although $17 billion is an awful lot to all of us, there's probably $100 billion out there of bad mortgages, and $17 billion is really just a drop in the bucket. We need a bigger fix, and we need it soon. And maybe Mr. Jabor can help us with that fix. Hello, Wade. How are you?
Hi, Bob. How are you tonight?
We're doing great. We're talking mortgages, and couldn't think of a better person to talk to that about than you. You are both a real estate broker and also assist your clients in obtaining financing. Is that correct?
That's correct. I assist them in financing. I am a registered mortgage broker in the state of New York. That has even become an issue in the last year or two, which is kind of a good thing. You know, I've been licensed as a mortgage broker for about 25 years, as long as I'm a real estate broker, primarily to assist the home buyers. Lately, anyway, this past year or so, they did impose some new regulations, so they made the mortgage brokers go back to school and take 45 hours of class and take a national test, a state test, get background checks, fingerprinted, and the whole works to be qualified as a mortgage broker, which in the long haul is a good thing, because you did have some scrupulous mortgage representatives. Although in the past, these mortgage brokers were enabled by the banks as well. So, you know, a lot of people wanted to finger point the mortgage brokers, but they were enabled by the big guys, I would say. In any case, today it is very hard to get a mortgage. You know, the banks.
Even though we're hearing that the government is pumping all of this money into the banks, and Freddie and Fannie are trying to stimulate the housing market, it's still difficult, you're saying?
It's extremely difficult. I don't know what this new law that they passed now, I don't know what that's going to do. From what I'm understanding, it's really not going to do much. They say it's window dressing. They say it has no effect on the Fannie and Freddie Mac loans, which really are the bulk of the loans in the country. They were all Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac approved. So, this new law, again, doesn't have any bearing on the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loans. So I don't know what it's going to do. I'm told by you know, some specialists that it's like window dressing in effect.
Take us back about 20 years to a time when you actually walked into a physical bank, got the loan from the bank, and actually went back to the bank to close. That's history, right?
Complete history. It used to be they knew Robert Howe, they knew Wade Jabor, they looked at your credit rating, they looked to see that you had your, you know, that the income could cover your mortgage, and they were happy to lend you the money. And, you know, they did do the qualifications, but they also looked at you as a person. Today, you know, it's funny. Today I hear people say to me, well, I've been with Chase or with whatever, any number of the banks, Wells Fargo. I've been with them for years and years, and my loan has been with them, and I've been paying it on time. And I say to them, well, I'm sorry, but that doesn't mean diddly, because they don't know you anymore. You're a number. And just because you had one loan with them doesn't mean, you know, that they're going to give you another loan. When you apply for a loan today, you're applying on through the computer system. It's being processed and reviewed with people in different parts of the country. And again, they don't know Wade Jabor, Bob Howe. So everything is going to be with the guidelines and the criteria that are set forth with the banking regulations and with the Fannie Mae guidelines, and probably up the ladder to the Congress, who's imposing all these guidelines.
So that old saying that you're only a number is really true in this case. You're really only a FICO score. Isn't that correct?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And if your FICO score happens to be below a certain number, such as 640, and it was dropped because maybe there was an inquiry on your credit report, it has no bearing. They don't care. So, in other words, you apply for, you know, maybe you went looking for a car last week and they checked your credit, and that might have dropped your credit a point below the mark. Well, now when you go for a mortgage, you're out, and they don't care why. If there's a medical bill that maybe you're disputing for $100 or $200 or a telephone bill that you're disputing for a couple of months and it goes into late, that'll destroy your credit. So, you know, there's nobody to explain this to, absolutely nobody. It's all in the system.
So even as we're sitting here chatting, our credit scores could be going down if someone puts an inquiry, whether it's a landlord or a credit card solicitation or maybe you're trying to lease or buy a car, and that's sucking a few points off of your score.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yep.
Now, take us through a few general a few other general items that banks are looking for before we get into those intricacies that really are aggravating and negative and a draw on you know, making mortgages. Hold that thought for a moment, but just tell us, what are other general, besides the FICO score, which unfortunately probably combines for 99% of the application. What are some other things that are
general? There are three major factors in getting a mortgage. Number one is your credit score. Number two is your income. And number three are the assets. Those three items have to be verifiable and in good standing. So credit score we just touched on. Your income. They have a formula they use for your income to see that you could sustain that monthly mortgage payment. The assets that you're putting down, if you say you're putting down 10%, 20%, that's got to be all verifiable money that's been in the bank for at least 3 months. So those are three major components.
So let's take income for a moment. Is there any longer, or was there even, a general rule as to income? I know there was a rule at one time that it should be 1 week's worth of your mortgage or your rent payment should be 1 week's worth of your monthly income.
Right, right. Well, that's the old way of talking about it, but you know, the normal way today is they call it a 28-36 ratio. So you would take your monthly income, 28% of your monthly, you cannot exceed 28% of your monthly income in housing, meaning your mortgage payment, your real estate taxes and insurance. Or if it's a condominium or in a co-op, that equates to housing. So that, again, is your mortgage payment, your common charges, your real estate taxes. That's the 28% ratio. Then the 28-36. The 36 ratio is your overall debt, meaning if you have a car payment, credit cards, and such like that.
Okay. So, and how about – go ahead.
Well, that's it. So that's the 28-36. Now, that has changed today a little bit. They, depending on your credit score, that has been elevated even up to about 40-45% as overall debt of your monthly.
Okay. And what constitutes income nowadays? Is it your W-2, a 1099? Is it trusted?
It'll be one of both, and it'll be the gross amount. It's before taxes. So, you know, if you're making $50,000 a year gross, then that is your income. They're not going to look to see what you're coming home with. So that's one positive aspect, I guess. If you're self-employed, well, that generally becomes hard because self-employed, they're going to be looking at three years, average of 3 years income. And that's pretty rough because, you know, if you have a bad year, that's going to drop your income down. And people, you know, people when they're self-employed, maybe they are, you know, maybe the business is paying for the car, or maybe the business is paying for some of the, you know, some of the everyday items. So, you know, people report income differently and adjust it differently when they're self-employed. And speaking of self-employed, years back, you know, they had, if you remember the old days, they had Greenpoint Bank. You know, if you, that was a bank that was good for, I used to say, let's say the pizza guy. They were able to go in there, put their 25-30% down payment, and they didn't care about the what kind of income you had. Because you were into the house for 25-30% down payment, you had good credit, you're a neighborhood, you're a community person, and they were happy to lend you the money. There is no more of that. There is no more of no income check loans or anything along those lines. So that affects, you know, again, that affects now the little businessman that, you know, maybe he could afford it, but he's, you know, not reporting everything properly on his tax returns.
I like the way you indicate not reporting everything properly.
Properly. Well,
being the operative word, yes. And how about you also said, Wade, the third aspect of the third factor was assets. Now, how about a person that says has $1 million in the bank but no income, maybe retired or maybe they have $1 million worth of property?
Believe it or not, it's not good. And you don't have a job right now, or you're retired, but you know, you could definitely sustain it, but it's still not good. They want to see that monthly income. They want to see the monthly income to cover that mortgage payment regardless.
So the small business person has been squeezed out of the market. The older, maybe retiree, is getting squeezed out, and
sure, because maybe he's not making so much money on his you know, on the money that's in the bank. What are they getting? 2-4% on their $1 million that's sitting there. So maybe it's not covering. But yeah, that's right. They are getting squeezed.
All right, Wade. Now we're hearing all these terms: Freddie, Fannie, FHA, and VA. Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, they're all Fannie and Freddie is governed, and FHA and VA. All of these products and loans are insured by the government. So, you know, several years ago, we were all used to hearing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. These are all you know, government-insured mortgage-backed securities. I don't want to get too intricate in this because I'll get lost myself, but they are government-backed, government-insured, basically. So right now, Fannie and Freddie are really very strict with their guidelines. They're not underwriting loans like they used to. They don't have so many different products like they used to. You know, they used to have the 90% financing, 95% financing. Fannie and Freddie are out of that. But believe it or not, the FHA and VA loans are doing these type of loans. You can still today go and buy a house with 3% down payment. Not a problem. VA loans as well. But you're going to be paying for it. There's going to be what they call PMI. It's a private money insurance. And so now what we have is an insurance company, which is the government, backing the loan. So maybe try to make it a little clearer. If I'm borrowing more than 80% financing, if I'm only able to put down 5% or 10%, that spread between the 80% financing and more is going to be insured, and I'm going to be paying for that insurance, which could be upwards, well, there's a formula to it, but it gets costly. It'll cost the consumer probably about 5%, 5 to 10% additional of their mortgage payment. There are some formulas, there are some numbers. I can't really, you know, explain all of that at the moment. But they, bottom line is, they still do have 3% down, 5% down. VA loans.
Well, that helps you at least get into the deal, but then it's more costly as you're going over the years.
No doubt about it. So, you know, there goes that 4% interest rate. You're going to get that great rate, but you're paying an insurance premium on top of it.
And how about any other restrictions with the FHA and VA that we should know about?
They're all right. They're just, you know, there's not really many more restrictions. There's just they're having acknowledgments and proof of what's going on by everybody. So in other words, the borrower has to have, there's a lot of people signing off. The real estate broker has to sign off on the loan. The real estate salesperson has to sign off. You know, they're acknowledging the loan. I'm not saying sign off. They're acknowledging the transaction, I should say, the sale. The attorneys are acknowledging. You know, they're getting signatures from everybody. They're all very strict. The guidelines are you know, they're Let's put it this way. They're checking every aspect of those three criteria that I've mentioned. They're checking every part of it. The credit, the assets, and the income. All the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted.
Now, from a seller's perspective, do I care if my buyer is getting Fannie, Freddie, FHA, or VA?
Probably not. Because no matter what we're doing, even if I'm putting 30% down payment and getting a regular loan or a Fannie loan, or as long as that person is qualified, they will get the loan. So it doesn't matter. The answer to your question is the seller should not have any concern as long as that person is fully qualified. A lot of times people think that, oh, well, he's only putting 5% down, he's only putting 10% down. It doesn't matter, because even if I'm putting down 30%, the house has to appraise. So that's the other component on closing the deal for the seller. So in other words, just to do simple math, we're buying a house for $1 million, and I want to go get 70% financing. well, if that house only appraises for $900,000, the bank is only going to give me 70% financing of $900,000. So I don't have enough money now. I have to pick up the spread. So in other words, with seven nines are what, 63? They're only going to give me $630,000. 70% of 900 is $630,000. It's not enough for me to close on that deal. So that is where a seller should have a concern in the appraisal.
But otherwise, every other deal, whether it's Fannie, Freddie, FHA, or VA, they've fully qualified these people and property, and that has to occur before any closing occurs.
By all means, yes.
All right, so,
you know, today we as a real estate broker and a mortgage broker, one of the key things that I do before we enter into a contract of sale is do a full qualification on the people. That's very important because nothing's going to go slip through the cracks anymore at all. And when we miss something, we pay the price for it. It's not going to close.
And would you recommend a prudent home buyer to start maybe a year in advance or so to start working on this mortgage issue, this loan issue? Is that
No. I don't think that's I think because that could change tomorrow too. You know, if someone runs their credit, that could go out. But they should do their homework. They should know the basic qualification guidelines that they need to. Well, wait, let me back up a minute. Is your question, so in other words, I want to make sure I have the assets in the bank, I want to make sure my income is good, and I want to make sure my credit is good a year earlier?
Right. I mean, start preparing.
Yeah.
Things rather than walk in off the street and you say, you know, your score is only so and so, and you say, geez, I took out a credit card, I didn't realize it went down a little. Are there things that?
I guess it's good to do that, but you know, typically people are going to say today, well, I want to buy a house, and I'm going to start looking, and I make up my mind, and I start, you know, now. It's always good to be aware of what they're going to be up against in the future, no doubt about it.
But more often than not, they see something, they want to buy it, and they ask you, let's figure out how we're going to do it.
Well, yeah. A lot of times people sit home and they decide, you know, maybe it's time we're going to buy a house, or maybe it's time we're going to buy a car, or maybe it's time we're going to move. So they get the itch and they start doing what they're doing. You know, a lot of people do plan for the future. They say, all right, next year we're going to buy, but... you know, I think I don't know. I could be wrong. My opinion is, once people get the urge to go do something, they're going to start doing it.
Now we've been talking about general mortgage applications and general regulations and rules, tightening up of them and the enforcement of them. Share with us some of the things that might not come to mind that aggravate you on a daily basis, that cause your deals to die in what might have other been a normal, straightforward deal. What are some of the things, if you were head of the Fed, what would you do to start easing up on this mortgage, the continuing mortgage crisis?
Well, my opinion is that they're looking for any reason not to give you the mortgage. That's how I see it today. And again, this goes back to the Fed, to the Congress, to the guidelines that were set forth 10 years ago, where they said to put everybody into a house, so you know all you had to do was sign on the dotted line. Today, it's those people saying, you know, tighten up the regulations. There's a multitude of things that can go wrong during the application process. Again, you touched on the credit score. They'll look at where you've lived, if you moved. I mean, things like moving from one location, from one house to another, from one apartment to another over the last year or two could complicate the matter. Looking at your your payment history of where you were renting or living for the last couple of years can actually complicate the matter. The things in your when they go to verify your assets, a lot of people are making $50,000, $100,000. People are making $1 million. I had recently a gentleman that earned over $1 million, and they questioned why there was an extra $5,000 deposit, which was out of the norm, in his checking account that month. A guy that's making that kind of money.
Wow.
I'm maybe exaggerating the numbers a little bit, but if there is something out of the ordinary that's deposited into your checking account, they're going to question it. I had a case where not too long ago, where the young couple got married, and she actually owned the house before, so talking about, she had a mortgage, she was in good standings, we went to get a refinance, she was married in that time, and they questioned why there was an extra $7,000 or $10,000 deposit in her account. And here's a woman that's making $200,000 a year, but they still picked up on the $10,000. She said, it was from my wedding. Well, give me a list of everybody that gave you that money. you're talking about people that gave $200 cash, $500 cash, stuff like that. They were now actually requested a list of the people that gave $500 cash gift. Is that a little extreme?
Yes, it is extreme.
Now, is she gonna put those people's name down on record to get them in trouble, possibly?
Yeah, definitely.
So it is to the extreme when they're looking to do those verifications. So now, you could get past the credit score, you could get past the application process of where you've lived and how much you've been paying rent and all of that stuff, and the formulas of whether you could afford the house or not, and maybe because you have one credit card that's over $100, that it might throw the formula out of whack. You're going to lose. You might not qualify for the mortgage because of a simple $100 credit card. You could get past all of that, and now we got to go to the bank appraiser, and that really is the thing that has broken the camel's back, in my opinion. They used to have guidelines with the appraisals. If you want me to get into that part of it now, Bob?
Yes. Well, we're winding down, and I think this is an appropriate question to end on is, tell us about appraisers, appraisals, and how. I think we had this conversation with you off the record that it's your opinion that the appraisal process is really one of the most onerous stages in this whole credit application.
It is. Years ago, all the years that I'm in the business, the appraiser was supposed to come to the property, and they're supposed to have three similar properties, three similar homes, three similar properties of the subject that have sold within the last year, within a mile or two in the immediate area. Those guidelines have now changed to three similar properties that have sold in the last 3 months within a half a mile. In Bay Ridge, a half a mile is only 10 blocks. Now, sometimes last year we had a bad winter, then maybe there was no sales for a couple of months. Put that aside. The major banks now hired a management company to hire the appraisers. So what's happening is these appraisers, they used to make $400 or $500 to come and appraise the house. Now, because it's going through the management company, these guys are only going to make maybe $200. Whoever's next on the list comes. That means the next guy could be coming from Montauk, Long Island, to Brooklyn, New York. He doesn't know the community. He doesn't know the neighborhood. He doesn't know the strength of the area. I had an instance lately where he appraised the house, let's say, on 98th Street. He brought the house in for $100,000 less. We sold the house for $1 million. He brought the house in for $900,000. I says, well, here, there's a house on 78th Street that sold just now. Same thing. Can't use it. Only it's a mile away, more than a half a mile. I said, well, here, use this house over here. It just sold now 6 months ago. Can't use it. Too far away. Too, in time. So now this house was brought in at $900,000, where we had a sale price of $1 million. Now the thing that troubles them is you've got two doctors. In this particular case, we had two doctors, fully qualified. They could afford it. They've shopped. They've looked. They know the market. They saw that that was the best value. The market makes the price. They saw that that house was a value at $1 million. Now the appraisers come along because they don't really want to put the time and effort. They don't know Bay Ridge like they should, let's say, or do the homework that they should because they're not getting paid for it as they used to. Appraiser comes along and says it's worth $900,000. So immediately the borrower, the buyer, is going to turn around and say, well, the bank is telling me it's only worth $900,000. Now that property got negotiated down to a sale price of $900,000. The troublesome thing is it's either going to sell at $900,000 or it's not going to sell. My question is, and I spoke to our politicians about this, what happens to the next house? The next house, maybe we're going to be lucky to achieve that $900,000 mark. It might be lower, or it doesn't sell. If it doesn't sell, we didn't generate any economy. There was no mortgage tax. There was no transfer tax. There was no paint store. There was no hard, no appliances, nothing. So to me, I feel that they're looking to collapse certain markets. Who they? The higher-ups are looking to collapse the market. That's my opinion. You have buyers that are willing to pay. Market makes the price. Why don't they let the market heal itself and do what it has to do?
Yeah, this is troubling, you know, the scenario you paint where there's a rippling downward effect of all the property values.
No doubt about it. So here in Bay Ridge, Diker Heights, Bensonhurst, and our areas over here that we're familiar with, we have stable markets that really did not, you know, they did not drop in value, but they were forced down in value because of the banks and the appraisal.
Right.
Because the buyers wanted to pay.
Right.
They wouldn't allow it. So all in all, I know we have to wind down. All in all, the banks need to loosen the belt a little bit. We don't want to give the store away. We want the right guidelines. Bob, several years ago, you could go and borrow 105%, 110% of a house. So you're buying a house for $100,000. You could borrow $110,000. They were giving you cab fare to go home with, basically. Today, and they were giving it to the people that had no right borrowing the money. The credit scores were bad. The employment was not sufficient enough. Everything was against them. Today, it's the complete opposite, to the complete extreme. And I don't believe they want to give you the money.
Well, Wade, you have been very informative. I can't say you've been very optimistic, but maybe they'll have you on it. A couple of months, maybe the market will turn around and you'll be telling us that maybe the restrictions on appraisals and things have loosened up a little and the market.
Well, I hope so. But people, I guess, are, you know, the other part is too, Bob, there was in the banking system, I guess there was a lot of regulations that were being passed along to the employees of the bank that they didn't really know what to do or how to do it. And maybe a lot of people were afraid to sign off on loans and stuff like that. So there was probably a lot of confusion going on there for a couple of years. It is settling down. It is getting, you know, we're getting used to what is required. But they still do need to lighten up a little bit.
Wade, before we sign off, give us a little advertisement for your real estate company and your mortgage company.
Well, thank you. Jabor Realty Company, I've been in the business now for, I guess, about a little better than 25 years. I'm on 3rd Avenue and 87th Street. Jabor Realty, we have 7 full-time salespeople in the office. We've been selling and serving our community, I think, very successfully. We do apartment rentals. We sell co-ops. We sell condominiums. Our primary business and market is in the Bay Ridge community, Bay Ridge and Diker Heights. And again, I've been a mortgage broker ever since I'm a real estate broker to accommodate the buyers and the borrowers. to help the process along, to make it easier and simpler for them. I have family coming into the business that actually have been in the business. My son and my daughter are working in the business now as well. We do property management. That's my son's forte. And Danielle, my daughter, she is in the sales end of it.
And Wade, how about a website and a phone number?
My website is Jabor Realty. It's pretty simple. It's jaborrealty.com, www. And my telephone number is 718-748-1800.
Well, Wade, we appreciate the time you've taken with us. You're a credit to your industry, both the real estate industry and the financial industry. And you have a great reputation throughout the borough of Brooklyn, and we thank you for being on our show. We look forward to having you on in the very near future to tell us that things have turned around.
We'll talk about some real estate next time.
We'll talk about real estate. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Bob. Well, thank you, and thank you, everybody.
Pleasure to have you.
Okay.
Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to our guest, Wade Jabor of Jabor Realty, for sharing his insights with us. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night, a good morning, and a good afternoon, I am your host, Robert Howe.